Welcome to the Aeronaut Podcast, dear listeners, the podcast where we go nuts about aviation, the talk shows that covers one topic in depth each episode. My name is Kiat, and together with me, Boss and Vincent, we are going to discuss about how airplanes work. First thing first, Boss and Vincent, how has your week been?
As for me, same as last week. The same old, nothing much, no difference.
What about you, Boss?
My week has been simplified. It's just the same. I mean, I didn't fly or I didn't work or anything, just at home only. So very mundane, if you ask me.
Sounds like a dream come true, though.
Yeah, it's not as dream come true as you think it is.
Imagine doing it for almost 2 years.
Yeah. I'll say that.
Okay.
I'm so used to moving, having life on the fast lane, if you understand what I'm trying to say, but I'm not used to just being idle. So yeah, I would say it like that.
You like to keep your life more upbeat, more happening. Is that what you mean?
I mean, I prefer to be productive. That's the term that I would like to use, rather than just being stale.
Yeah. I get what you mean there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. How about Kiat yourself? How was your week?
My week, it has been good. I just completed my 14 days after vaccination period.
Hey, congratulations.
Yeah. Was looking forward to this day for like the past 3 months. Managed to go out and have some good meal in a proper restaurant. The food tastes amazing. So it was nice, yeah.
You technically had a little freedom.
Yeah, technically, yeah.
All right. That's good. Yeah.
Should we start?
Yeah.
Okay.
All yours.
In today's episode, we will be talking about how airplanes work. From Icarus wings melting failure to Leonardo da Vinci's sketches, and finally to the Wright brothers' successful flight, few things have held a greater place in the human imagination than the dream of flight. The reality of how airplanes make use of lift and gravity to stay airborne is even more astonishing. Dear listeners, you must be wondering, what is it that keeps a plane in the air? The fascination with flight has motivated many notable scientists to learn about aerodynamics for hundreds of years till today. Sir Isaac Newton started this by devising the three laws of motion in the 17th century, which focus on how objects move and the forces that affect movement. Several scientists have also engaged in examination of the physics of flight to understand how birds fly, and to apply these fundamentals to developing and honing aircraft flight. The physics of flight explain how airplanes leave the ground and land again safely. Boss and Vincent, could you give our listeners a brief introduction how Newton's three laws of motion in 1665 applies to aerodynamics?
I'll go first. Okay. Newton three laws, as a refresher, I'll just say this. Okay, so the first law of motion is inertia. When an object at rest will remain at rest unless a force is acted upon it. And if it's in motion, it will remain in motion unless a force acts upon it. So a simple explanation is you're on a bus. Before you move, suddenly there's a sudden jerk to you. So you're moving. So that is the inertian law. When you're constantly in steady motion, you don't really feel like you're going to the front or you're going to the back. You're just, you know, you're together with the speed. And then when you stop, yeah. So that's how first law works. Now, the second law is actually F equals MA. Force equals to mass of an object times acceleration. So the amount of force needed for me to move a particular weight and the acceleration needed, right? So that's what Newton's second law is. And the third law is my most favorite. Every action has its equal but opposite reaction. So I would like to use a rocket as a very good example. It is actually projecting power downwards in order to move upwards. So every action has equal but opposite reaction. So that is three law. So how does that apply in our flying? Is we need acceleration in order to take off. And okay. Inertia plays a role when we are flying 800 kilometers per hour, for example. And we don't feel like we are actually stuck in one point. Like, you know, we are one with the aircraft, I would say. And equal and opposite reaction. So in order, you need power to move in front. So you have to push air in the back in that sense. So that's how F equals MA, inertia, as well as equal and opposite reaction. So the three laws play into that role.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Then what about Bernoulli's principle? How is it applied to aerodynamics?
Bernoulli's principle states that an increase in speed of a fluid occurs simultaneously with a decrease in pressure or a decrease in the fluid's potential energy. So what it means is that Bernoulli's principle is used to calculate the lift force on an aerofoil. If the behavior of the fluid flow in the vicinity of the floor is known, for example, if the air flowing past the top surface of an aircraft wing is moving faster than the air flowing past the bottom surface, then Bernoulli's principle applies in this scenario. So basically what it means, in short, it says that the pressure difference will actually result in an upwards lifting force. So eventually with this differential pressure leads to lift, and that's how aircraft actually lift off the ground. And if you were talking about things to determine the airspeed of the aircraft, basically there are two things, pitot tube and the static pod on the aircraft. That's how we determine the speed of the aircraft.
And also the altitude. I guess you'll be wondering why Bernoulli's principle is more towards liquid, but how is it associated with air? I'm sure you're curious about it, right?
Yeah. So air particles and liquid particles should not be the same thing.
Actually, they are. Air is another version of liquid. It's just that it's termed in such a way that air is another type of liquid. Because somehow, as how water would react to a particular aerofoil, air also reacts exactly like it.
Oh, okay.
It's just that the density of water and the density of air is different. That's why Bernoulli's principle does play into our aerodynamics.
Okay. Could you also tell us a little bit about the four different forces of aerodynamics?
Okay, so coming back to Newton's laws again, remember there's this one part where I say equal and opposite reaction?
Yeah.
So we have lift, and the contradicting thing is actually weight. And for thrust to go in front, you need drag, which pulls the aircraft back, right? So this is how the third law comes into picture. Now, acceleration also comes into place, where in order for me to accelerate, it creates more lift. So that's how it works. And the more heavier the aircraft, the more drag it creates. So they are directly proportional to each other. This is how it actually works.
Okay.
Lift basically pushes the airplane upwards, right? Mm-hmm. Weight is actually the force that pulls the airplane downward.
Gravity.
Yeah.
Coming around the way.
Yep. And thrust is basically a force that moves the airplane forward, and drag basically slows the airplane. This is just a simpler term.
Yeah, to simplify it.
So you guys are trying to say that whenever a plane is flying, there are always four forces acting upon it.
Yes. Theoretically speaking. Practical-wise, it's actually different.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, there's one more important thing that keeps the airplane flying. That is, they need a pilot to fly them.
I'm sure that's where you guys play the important role.
Yes, you can put it that way.
Okay, we went through the principles. Now let's get down to the actual flying. What's the basics of flight? How do you control the flight of an airplane?
Now let's say your arms are your wings, basically the aircraft wings. So if you actually place one hand down, or you put the one wing down, the other wing will actually go up, right? So basically, if you're talking about turning left and turning right, this is where they call the roll motion.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So to roll, the airplane is actually turning left or right.
I mean, okay, I'll try to help out. When we are flying, we can't really point our nose if we want to turn left or turn right. We actually have to roll the aircraft in order to turn to the left. So, logically speaking, what do you understand by a roll?
Oh, like a bird, is it? It lowers its wings one side to fly to the right, and
or
the opposite side if it wants to go to the left.
This is how we call it differential pressure. So the pressure on the lower wing is actually lower compared to the one that is going up. That's how it makes the aircraft turn. So that is what you call a roll. Now, the second one is pitch. So basically, if you are familiar with musical tones, pitch is actually either you're going high or either you're going low. You have a low pitch voice and you have high pitch voice. That means the nose of the aircraft is either going vertically up or vertically down. That is pitch is all about. So normally we will pitch up to climb higher and we will pitch down to go low.
Oh, okay. So it doesn't follow the bird theory now, because what I know, birds flap their wings.
Yes, we do not flap our wings. We can't really flap our wings. We have engines, because flapping is a type of motion which creates the bird to move forward. So aircrafts are also theoretically a type of bird, but it's just that because the aircraft can't really flap its wings to fly, so they need an engine. So so that is how it generates power in order to move forward. So
okay.
Right. And yaw is the third, where you actually pointing the nose on a horizontal plane. It doesn't necessarily work in a sense where it's turning. I don't know whether you have noticed or you realize this in some videos, or even might have experienced on flying a plane. The aircraft is actually pointing to another side, but the runway is actually in another angle. So when it lands, it's actually like, wait, how's the aircraft landing? Why is the aircraft going by its side, but it's not going to the front kind of situation? Have you experienced it? Yeah, that is what you call a yaw.
How do you spell it?
Y-A-W.
Okay.
Another simplified version to explain yaw is, I think I'll use this term drift, because all of y'all are familiar with Fast and Furious. You know how they drift the cars, the aircraft is I mean, the car is not going pointed to another direction, but the car is actually going to another direction.
Yeah, now we're talking.
Yeah, so that is how a yaw actually works, where the aircraft is actually maybe pointed towards the right, but the aircraft is actually heading towards the left. Or the opposite, where the aircraft is pointing to the left and the aircraft is going towards the right.
So it's like opposite forces pressing against each other.
Yes, normally
different sides.
Yes, so normally we use this yaw very obvious on takeoffs and landings due to strong winds. So it is our practice to always point the nose into the wind to get better lift and to maintain a linear center line. That means we will have a invisible straight line. Yeah, so that's easier version to understand what is yaw all about.
Why is it called yaw?
I'll be frank, most of our air terms and air laws are all originated from sailing.
Oh, I did not know that.
So even in ships, they yaw in order to go straight to counter the current of the aircraft. So like, why is it called yaw? Is because it's yaw is actually a sailing term referred to a motion of an unsteady ship rotating about its vertical axis.
Okay.
It originated from sailing.
Okay. So are you trying to say when we land, there might be some consequences, or there might be some times where it will be a challenge to land a plane?
Maybe because we are, when I say we, I mean Vincent and I, and some, I mean most of the crew, we are used to flying in such conditions. I mean, initially, there are moments quite exhausting, challenging as well, but there are times where, you know, if you ask me, it's just another Tuesday. So I guess it depends on the severity of the crosswinds. Like 15 knots crosswind. So it is not that bad. Because our company's policy, we are not allowed to go beyond our limit. So if we go beyond our limit, then you know that we do not meet stabilization criteria, which I think we have explained this on the previous season. If it's not under our company policy, we do not do it.
The simpler way you can say is not every day is a Sunday. Not every landing will be the same landing, even if the same guy flies the plane.
Actually, there's a saying, no two landings is the same. Be it the same person or another person, no two landings is the same.
Yeah. There's no such thing as a perfect landing. You may do a perfect one, in your opinion, it may be a perfect one today, then tomorrow it may be a horrible one. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, we can't predict what it's like, you know,
yes.
in the air.
Because air is unpredictable.
Yeah. Even towards the end of the landing zone, then there'll be suddenly a gust of wind or something. Then, you know, you have to take reaction of it.
It is common where if it's a good landing, it's actually the captain. And if it's a bad landing, it's a co-pilot. So
It's not necessarily the case,
but common passenger understanding is, oh, if it's a good landing, a smooth one, it's the captain. But if it's a bad one, it's actually the co-pilot. So I find that quite...
I did not know that there's this stigma.
There is. Because when I started flying, a few of the passengers actually will ask, this one sure Captain Len. You have sure Captain Len. And then there's something, this one sure co-pilot Len. But, you know, the crew behind, they know, they actually know who is the one do the landings. He who does the public announcement is the one doing the landing, right?
Okay, now we move on. All of that is well and good. But what about steering in the air? Getting a large metal airplane off the ground is an impressive feat. But it won't mean much if it can only fly in a straight line. Of course, we know birds don't just fly in a straight line.
Okay, like Boeing...
Actually, it applies to the same thing like just now, roll, pitch.
Yeah, it rolls. Then the difference is some aircraft got, I would say, steering wheel in layman term, but it's actually called a control column. And some people have a joystick. I mean, when I say some people, some aircrafts have a joystick. Like Airbuses is a joystick, and for Boeing aircrafts, it's more of a control column. Like, even the aircraft that I fly has a control column.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so...
In car terms, it's basically like an automated car versus a manual car.
So control column has like a physical steering wheel kind of thing, and a joystick is, well, a joystick. So it's kind of straightforward of a joystick. You can't really, you know.
Listeners, now we come to the most interesting question you want to know. Here is probably something people might be curious about, but have never thought about it. How do you start a plane? Do you have keys? How do you ignite the engines?
For the jet aircraft, basically the starting process normally uses an electric motor to start the engine. So this is going to be slightly technical. The motor is bolted to the outside of the engine and uses a shaft and gears to connect to the main shaft. Actually, it's somewhat similar to a car engine. You know. Then the electrical motor spins the main shaft until there is enough air blowing through the compressor. And eventually the combustion chamber to light the engine.
Oh, are we talking about those 1900
style.
Where you have to take a handle and then from the engine and spin that?
Oh, no, that.
This is the current aircraft that we're actually flying right now. Uh-huh. This is actually the current aircraft we're flying right now.
I thought in this modern world, we wouldn't be having something it's, that manual.
The concept is similar. Yeah,
the concept. That's how we actually start our engines, to be honest. We have a starter motor which supplies air to the compressor. And because of, the Bernoulli's principle, it literally turns the turbine, so for the compressor to move. So that when there's airflow coming inside, it creates compression and then it creates heat and then the gas is actually released into it and then ignition. And that's how it runs.
Yep.
That's how it is. I'm sorry to go very technical, but yeah, this is how it actually works.
So, in essence, we don't push a button.
We do, but there's a process towards it.
Ah, Okay.
However, there are certain planes that you need keys to actually turn on the engines.
Mm.
If you recall, Vincent, our flying school, remember we always see there is a key always hanging there. Yep. Yeah, we actually need a key to actually turn on the engine. Actually, in my aircraft, there is a keyhole. It's just that I've never personally seen the engineers use it before, and I've never seen an actual key before, a physical key before.
Maybe you could try your house key.
Ha, hilarious.
In layman's term, if you're comparing a car with a push start button and a car that requires key, basically something the same.
Actually, yeah, that's the best we could explain. It's like we are using a push start button car for our big aircraft, yeah.
Okay. So buttons do still play a role here.
Yeah, it's somewhat. If you're talking about layman's term, yes, it's somewhat similar. To know the in depth of it is a different story altogether.
The best to understand is it's a push button car. How do you on the engines in a very sophisticated car? You just push a button, the car turns on. That's how we do it. It's just that we have a procedure to it. That's all.
Ah, okay.
That's the only difference.
So it's like driving school where we always have to check our mirrors, check our gearbox, check our handle brakes, check our steering wheel, and all. It's like a checklist procedure before we ignite the engine.
There is, yes, exactly. That's the best. That's the best way to say it.
Ah, okay. Now I get it.
Okay.
Let's move on to the next question. Guys, it's a common situation for travelers. You fasten your seatbelt, listen to the pre-flight safety demonstration, and prepare yourself for takeoff. After a few moments, the pilots come on the overhead and says, "Ladies and gentlemen, we are now at our cruising altitude of 36,000 feet. Then I know it's time to kick back and wait for the refreshment cart to come around." But many of us have wondered why planes go this high up in the first place. The common cruising altitude for most commercial airplanes is between 33,000 and 42,000 feet, or between about 6 and nearly 8 miles above sea level. Typically, aircraft fly around 35,000 or 36,000 feet in the air. Why planes fly at their recommended height?
Why planes fly at the recommended height? Very simple. It's to save fuel and to save the company a lot of money.
How do you save fuel by flying at a specific height?
Okay, I need to correct you in this part where, okay, we do not really say, "Ladies and gentlemen, we are currently cruising at 36,000 feet and then service starts." No, not really. We will actually do our PA of, "We are currently at this height, probably towards landing right?
Another thing regarding the refreshment part, right?
Mm-hmm.
When the seatbelt signs come off, that's where the cabin crew actually prepare the meals. So technically at 36,000 feet, you most likely already get your meal by then, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but anyways, yeah, we do fly around these heights for fuel efficiency, as per what Vincent said. Simply because the air is less dense in that height, so we have lesser friction, and our engine's fuel efficiency is much more efficient in that height.
Ah, okay.
So you burn the same amount of fuel, but you go much more faster.
Okay. So at a certain height, I can actually fly a plane faster. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes. That is why, if you notice, the Concorde actually flies at 60,000 feet. Less air resistant and same amount of power, but can travel faster. So the lower the aircraft, slower the aircraft, and the more fuel you burn for a certain distance. So that is how fuel efficiency works.
Okay. But when you're traveling a high altitude, isn't the air thinner way up there?
Yeah. Density. The air is thinner, but not to a position where there's no oxygen for the fuel to burn. It's still there. It's just that the thinner the air, the lesser friction on the aircraft can go faster. Just for understanding's sake, imagine putting a group of people in a room and you try running inside that room. Do you experience a lot of friction? Will you be slower?
Yeah, it is.
Right. Now, similarly, in that same room, if you put maybe three people or two people, will your speed of running be faster than before?
Depends on air direction, I guess.
No, I mean in a room. Okay, let's put air direction in that matter. Is it faster a little bit compared to a group of people earlier?
Maybe.
Yeah, the less dense the air, the faster the aircraft goes. Like that's the best I can explain.
Kat, before you get confused, right? Let me toss you just a question. So let's compare. Like, if you're driving on a highway at 110 kilometers per hour, or let's say the limit, whatever the limit is set, and if you're driving around the town with traffic and all that, which do you think will burn more fuel?
Okay, Vincent, I get what you're trying to say. Yeah. Okay. You're on a highway for worth about 10 kilometers, and you're in town driving for the same distance of 10 kilometers, right?
Yeah.
Now, which one would you burn more fuel?
I would say the one where we are stagnant, where we are stuck in a traffic jam.
So basically, it's in town, right? You get what we are trying to say right now?
Okay. Let me put it this way. So if you're moving at a certain direction and you apply slightly a little bit more force, so it saves you more energy in order to go forward rather than you stopping and then going in a traffic jam. So that will use more force because you are stagnant and you have to use more energy just to go forward.
Yes.
Because so, friction plays a role here.
Yeah. So when
so it's somewhat similar to airplanes, but the thing is the difference of height.
Ah, okay.
And you have to understand, the lower you are, the slower the aircrafts get to fly because there are too many aircrafts around. And also the fly at higher heights is because of weather. Like the aircrafts that I fly, I have to fly in weather. So the higher you go, the more comfort, in other words.
Into a storm.
Not into a storm. We fly around it if it's really severe. However, we would say fly into weather. So it's still within tolerable limits, I would say.
So will you go above a storm or around a storm?
I fly around a storm.
Most of us, we avoid going over or under the storm. Basically, we try to go as far as
possible. My maximum legal aircraft flying limit is 25,000 feet, but the normal heights that I fly is 18,000 feet. So if there is going to be a heavy rainfall in front of me, I have no choice but to either turn left or right. Or worse, I have to go through it. And normally, that's the time passengers will actually be holding their hands on their seats. But normally, it doesn't get to that level.
There's this term called the cowboy pilots.
Who are these cowboy pilots?
They are very brave and bold.
Normally, so, they are ex-Air Force guys. They know their limit. And normally, commercial pilots would not take the risk. But
yeah, and to them, it's always okay to fly into a storm.
Oh.
I think it applies to boss.
I know my aircraft. You know, they say you're one with the aircraft.
Here's an interesting question. Have any planes flew over Mount Everest before?
Okay, how do I put it this way? Have any planes flew over Mount Everest? Yes. Planes have flown over Mount Everest. However, from the navigation standpoint, we do not have airways flying overhead Mount Everest. They normally go around it. And when I say planes flew over Mount Everest, yes, in a sense where normally they do it like a tourist attraction where they will actually pick up passengers and then they'll go around it and then they land at Kathmandu, if not mistaken, and they will give you a cert. So then, yeah, you flew around over Mount Everest. So that's the closest I can think of. Airways are basically like highways. Yeah, so they don't go over Everest, no.
Yeah, but I think if flying over Mount Everest will actually create some unforgiving weather itself, so I don't think it's just not recommended to fly over the Everest itself.
and it's quite the air will be quite unstable there. It will create turbulence, and you know, it'll give, again, comfort for passengers, right? So we do not want them to start like grabbing their seats for some reason, make them panic, right? So yeah.
You know what? It'd be amazing to see the entire Himalayan range from the top while flying in an airplane. The white snow-covered mountains peeking through the clouds while you sit on your seat looking through your window and sipping on a hot cup of coffee or tea. Have you guys watched the movie Everest?
Yes, a long time ago.
Yeah, it is based on a real-life events of the 1996 Mount Everest disaster and focuses on two expedition groups getting to the top of Everest. In a scene that caught my attention was they mentioned that human beings are simply not built to function at the cruising altitude of a Boeing 747. Our bodies are literally dying at that altitude. How is it that we are able to remain safe inside a Boeing 747 despite cruising at such deadly altitude?
Actually, we put you guys to sleep, and when you guys wake up, that's where you land.
I like that one.
I don't remember sleeping. Wow.
Okay, that's a really good one. Okay, the simplest answer I could give is the aircraft is pressurized at that particular height. That is why we can be in that altitude. Yeah, that's the simplest answer I could explain. Yeah, remember I mentioned earlier that the higher you go, the less dense the air it is, but the oxygen is still present.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it still works the same concept in the aircraft.
Ah, okay.
Kiat, you do a lot of hiking, right? So basically, the higher you hike, the thinner the air.
That's true. Yeah. We get hypothermia.
Yeah. So basically, it's the same concept.
Same concept.
Altitude sickness.
Yeah.
So the higher we go, how we can breathe in the aircraft is because the aircraft is pressurized.
Okay. Let's jump to our final question for today. Once a plane gets into the air, it can fly at amazing speeds, and they are always affected by the wind and other weather conditions. How fast can a plane really fly, and whose call is it to fly at what speed?
Boss, you want to go first?
I knew you were going to throw me here. Okay. All right. It depends on the situation. So on ground, it's actually planned by the flight planners to fly at what speed. On air, it is sole discretion of the pilot on what speed he can fly, provided the conditions are met and the limitations of the aircraft.
And you have enough fuel reserve.
Yeah, because the faster you go, the more power you need. The more power you need, the more fuel you burn. So the more fuel you burn, so we have certain limitation on how much fuel that we can use and we cannot use, you see. This is how it is. How fast can aircraft fly? It depends on the aircraft again. The Concorde flies at supersonic speeds where it is faster than the speed of sound. Most of our commercial aircraft, the most common ones like the 37, the 380, the 747s, the 777s, you know, all of them normally they are called subsonic flights. So they are slightly below the speed of sound at the specific height. And the aircraft that I fly is 240 knots, which is on average is about 500 kilometers per hour. It depends, but I think for better comparison of speeds, I think best, I think Vincent will explain better. So, Vincent?
Just based on what I've thought, the average jet aircraft speed, they average about 880 to 950 kilometers an hour. Right. But if you were to compare it, let's say, to an F1 car, the average speed of an F1 car travels about 370 kilometers an hour.
Yeah, which is already fast.
Yeah, to us, we think that, well, you know, riding in an F1 car, let's say even if you had a chance, it's going to be super fast for us, right?
Yeah.
Average Ferrari speed, their top speed is about 355 kilometers an hour. To compare Ferrari speed with an aircraft speed, I think it's close to three times more compared to an aircraft.
Yeah.
So imagine you riding in a Ferrari and it's three times faster. So that's how fast an airplane flies.
For those people who are curious about kilometers to miles per hour, it's you just the kilometers you have to divide it by 1.6, so you get the value of miles per hour. Just for info.
So if I put wings in a Ferrari and travel at the fastest speed that it could go, could a Ferrari fly?
I think it could lift off. Yeah.
It can lift off. That is why they have. If you notice, like some cars, they actually have spoilers at the back of their car to ensure the car is much more grounded. So yeah, that's one of your reasons why aircraft can the car can lift off.
And
so,
most of these supercars, they are built very low. Their center of gravity is closer to the ground.
Okay.
The closer they are, even for aircraft, the lower the aircraft towards the ground, the more stable it is.
Yeah. Okay. That's the end of it, listeners. We hope you enjoyed this week's topic on how airplanes work. We will be continuing this topic in our next episode in How Airplanes Work Part 2. Today, we went through Newton's three laws of motion. We also went through a little bit on Bernoulli's principle. How does it apply to aerodynamics? Compared a bird to a plane. How does a plane use a similar flight motion as to a bird in order to fly? We also went a little bit on how do we land a plane in windy condition using yaw. We learned about how do we start a plane, and we also went a little bit on why planes fly at their designated height. We also touched a bit about pressurized cabin, and finally we compared a Ferrari to a plane. It was a wild episode. Please remember to like and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Aeronuts, which is Elias, AER0NUTS. I repeat, Elias, AER0NUTS. We would love you to share your views or provide us with any interesting question you would like us to talk about in the next future episodes. Once again, together with me, Boss, and Vincent, we wish you a pleasant flight.